Welcome back, everybody, to the Drink and Learn podcast. I'm drinks historian Elizabeth Pierce.
And I'm bartender Abigail Gullo.
And today we have a slightly unusual format because we're going to answer a few listener questions. And then we're going to give you some spring cleaning advice. And spring cleaning / you're already stuck at home. What else can you do at home? Advice. Let's start with a question that we got from Zane Brown.
Where are these questions coming from? Are they emailing?
Cheers. Yeah. So cheers at Drink and Learn.
And are these members of our Drink and Learn Revelers page as well?
Somewhere? So I didn't look up to see if Zane and his roommates Sarah and Fawn are Revelers. The next two questions will come from Revelers.
Very cool.
But Zane, we're answering your question, so I hope that this encourages you. If you are a Facebook participant, I know not everybody is, but if you are, to join the Drink and Learn Revelers page. So here is his letter. Hi, ladies. Hope your pandemic is going well. My roommates, who I will apparently be spending ample time with during this social distancing period, and I have some questions. My one roommate does not drink and has purchased Seed Lip liquors. She's wondering if y'all have any advice on killer drink recipes for her. She has all three they make. And they have a recipe book, but we thought we'd get your expert advice. Okay, so that is question number one. And I'll go ahead and read the second question that follows it, but they are slightly different takes. He said, also, since two of us do drink, but may not want full-strength beverages with so much time to consume them, wise, Zane.
Indeed. Very wise.
He says, is Seed Lip something we can use as an additive to enhance alcoholic beverages? And if so, what would you prescribe? Thank you both for your fantastic podcast. We hope to hear from you soon.
Quick interjection. We forgot to address that Seed Lip, SEEDLIP, is a non-alcoholic distilled product. And I'll link to their website in the show notes.
All right. Well, Zane, you sent this a little while back, but it's still a pandemic.
Pandemic. Here we are.
So hopefully this advice will be useful for you now or however long it is that you need to spend time with your roommates. So Abigail, I forwarded this to you and you said that you had just gotten some Seed Lip for your bar and had come up with some mocktails. So I guess let's start with ideas for his roommate and actually maybe for folks who have never tried this. Can you describe what they taste like? Because sure. I've definitely had one and it was like botanically, like it didn't taste sweet at all.
No.
And I thought it was very interesting. And to me, like scratched the itch of that, it scratches the itches of what alcohol can provide in its complexity. While not necessarily just bringing along sugar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's no sugar in Seed Lip. They distill it basically very similar to the way I think gin is distilled, but with vaporizing water instead of a mash. There might be a more complicated system that they use to make this distilled product non-alcoholic, but I have a sneaking suspicion it's vaporized infused water and then highly concentrated through the distilling process, which gives it more punch, say, than like a can of La Croix or flavored water.
So it's kind of like, even though perfume has alcohol in it, It's not alcohol that we drink. So it's this idea of concentrating flavor.
Yes.
Or, in this case, flavor, while perfume is concentrating aroma. Into this, taking lots of flowers and then smushing their all of their smells into a very small, small amount of liquid. Yeah. So it's
and that's what they do. They have three distinct flavors that I know of. One is spice, which is that kind of warm, kind of baking spice notes. One is called Grove, which I believe has like more citrus notes. And then there's one, I forgot what it's called, but it's like very green, like pea shoots and kind of green herbs and fresh like spring flavors. And those are the three flavors. They're very good. I like them.
Did you have a favorite?
It depends on what I'm making it with. The first recipe I'm going to give you actually requires more purchases, but these purchases can be found on Amazon. And that is if you take, I think either the Grove or the Spice works with this. If you include some non-alcoholic vermouth, which you can find if you Google it on the interwebs, and this Italian soda called Sand Bitter, which is essentially Campari without alcohol with like a little carbonation as well. If you find Sand Bitter and then the non-alcoholic vermouth and then the seed lip, you have basically a no-alcohol Negroni, which is a pretty big deal considering that a Negroni is all alcohol. So I was really impressed the first time I had one and found it quite delicious and refreshing. And it did kind of scratch that itch of like, what do I want from a Negroni? Something refreshing and bright and bitter. And it had all of that. So I was really happy with that. The Grove gets used a lot, the kind of pea shoots and green flavor.
It
would probably mix well with gin, but of course, if you're trying to keep it non-alcohol,
well, that would be the second question.
Okay, yeah, so. If you're trying to keep it non-alcohol, I think what I did with that one is one of my bartenders, Allie, she made this beautiful lemon thyme shrub. I don't know if you've listened to the show, you might know what a shrub is, but it's essentially fruit and sugar and vinegar, and it's used to kind of preserve the flavors of the fruit that you use. And you could use any fruit and herbs and even vegetables and make a beautiful shrub, and it stays nice and bright. And you could adjust the sugar and the vinegar depending on your taste and what you like. If you like it if you don't like the taste of vinegar, you could up the sugar. If you don't like it too sweet, you could pull down the sugar. And we did it with basically lemons, making oleosaccharin from the lemon peel and soaking the fresh thyme in vinegar for like a day, and then combining the two, and straining out the solids, and basically then you have the shrub. That with some tonic water and the Grove was a beautiful, refreshing cocktail that wasn't sweet. It was very bright. Also didn't have any citrus in it, but it still had that really nice acidic sharp flavor from both the vinegar in the shrub and the tonic. So I really liked that one a lot. That was really nice. If I had some fresh peas, I would put them in there too.
So you started to answer this already. And my thought when he was asking about, how to make how to make a very high proof, maybe less high, or how to keep low ABV low. Could you half the amount, like say with this,
like do a split spice one.
Yeah. Half whiskey, half spice.
Yeah, sure.
Something. Yeah,
absolutely. Make a great Boulevard Day. But the question is, do you want to do that? Because that seed lip is pretty expensive. It's pretty much the same as the price of a bottle of booze. So I would make sure you ask that roommate who doesn't drink first if that's okay, if you use some of her seed lip in boozy cocktails. Because, honestly, it's one of the reasons why I've resisted it for so long, because it's difficult when you're charging $15, $16 for a cocktail to say, okay, well, now we're going to do a mocktail with Seedlip and it's still going to be $12, $13. You know, most people expect mocktails to be like under 10. And, but the price of the Seedlip kind of doesn't always make that an option. So, but it's, you know, but there's such a high demand for mocktails now that I think if you make them really interesting and tasty, that you can charge more for them. You know, people know, I think, I hope that people know when they come to my bar, they're not just getting, you know, cranberry juice and Sprite. You know, and there's your mocktail.
Well,
you know, they're getting something with a lot of thought put into it, a lot of research, and a lot of really, really good product where we can find it.
Well, and I guess that's what the seed that people would argue too, is that it costs that much to make this product that tastes satisfying. Mm-hmm. Since this was a home bar question, mm-hmm. Yes, first of all, check with your roommate, unless everybody went in and paid, you know, bought their own bottle or whatever, before you help yourself to the premium no booze products in your house. And especially in these times when we're all getting on each other's nerves, for lots of reasons, and mm-hmm. you don't want to annoy the people that you are stuck in your domicile with. Mm-hmm. But if you're just doing this at home, then I also think it is it's a good way to, if you are trying to watch your drinking. I do love the joke, you know, my doctor said I told me to watch my drinking, so I found a bar with a mirror. an oldie but goodie. But if you are trying to watch your drinking, that you can make a very high proof drink a little less high proof, or yeah. you can use these as alternates rather than just ye old bitters and soda. And
mm-hmm. which, you know, by the way, I heard back in my club days in the 90s mm-hmm. that's what Madonna drank when she went out and she wasn't drinking, bitters and soda. So as early as 1995, that was my drink of choice in the club, y'all. I'm at the tunnel dancing to house music, drinking bitters and soda because I'm such a straight edge. And I was really poor. I couldn't afford to drink drinks.
Yeah. Oh, but you know, but sometimes you go to a bar and bitters and soda, it's like $7 or something. I'm like, what? At the fancy places. They're fancy bitters.
Yeah, oh, my, like,
give me the Engo or the Peugeot, please.
I don't charge you that much for bitters and soda.
I don't know.
I really consider it. Like, I offer it to people who I could tell they're like not feeling well. Their tummy's a little upset, especially in New Orleans when people imbibe maybe too much. I'm like, here, try this bitters and soda. It's an old bartender trick to settle your tummy.
Yeah.
It's also very refreshing. I've turned a lot of people onto it. I got Chef hooked on it here too.
I think I was in London at somewhere fancy. And everything was fancy.
Oh, yeah. No, London, they'll charge you for everything because they pay everyone a living wage.
Yes. Well, so I won't be grumpy about that. But I was surprised. Grumpy.
Yes.
Boy, did I savor that bitters and soda. It's kind of like
the best bitters and soda I've ever had.
It's like when I ordered a Bellini at the place that invented them in Venice.
Oh, my God.
It was $30.
I was going to say $45.
Yeah, 30 euro, whatever it was. It's like every sip is a euro. And it was so crazy because it's like the Bellini is 30 euro and this cappuccino is one. Okay. So I haven't bought Seedlip, but I had a friend who he had two bottles because he did dry January, and I got to try one of them and I was like, oh, this is interesting. And he was mostly just drinking it as like a gin and tonic.
Yeah.
Or like with tonic. But I like the idea.
I bet that recipe they book came with a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Adding a little. So you could always lengthen things with sugar and citrus, but it tends to make the drink a little bit less complex, and you're losing some of those, you know, complex flavors in it. So I try to keep it light and not mix. Oh, or if I do mix stuff with it, it's stuff that's going to really enhance what's in there and make it pop, like the thyme. In that lemon thyme
yeah.
shrub. really yeah. made that green one pop.
Okay, so question number two is from Lee, and I guess it's kind of from me too. We had this conversation and neither of us had a satisfactory answer, and it is that we know, well, there's always exceptions, right? But in general, if there's citrus, you're shaking a drink, mm-hmm. so like daiquiri or margarita, whatever, and then there's stirred drinks. For example, Sazerac, Manhattan, Old Fashioned. But when they are served, the Old Fashioned is always served over rocks. I've never seen it neat. The Sazerac is never served over rocks. Mm-hmm. I've always seen it neat. And a Manhattan is either on the rocks in a rocks glass or up, no rocks. And we wondered, is that just like a thing that happened over time, that these drinks, or was the Manhattan on the rocks like an Old Fashioned was for a while, and then somebody decided to serve it up? And yeah, so why do you think these three stirred drinks are served differently?
Well, I'll say, first of all, the Sazerac is so unique in this and so special that I really think that this is I really think that the Sazerac is the most important one, because it is essentially an Old Fashioned, except for this process of serving it up and to rinse the glass with absinthe. And mm-hmm. the what that act does is this magical thing, that as this Sazerac sits there perfectly diluted at room temperature in your hand, sip after sip is going to reveal, like layers of an onion, all of these different flavors and aromatics. First, you'll taste something from the bitters, and then you'll taste something from the absinthe, and then you'll get a whiff of floral notes from the lemon peel. And it's just constantly changing as that drink moves towards room temperature. And mm-hmm. I love that aspect of it. And you will not have that if you serve an Old Fashioned up, because it doesn't have the absinthe rinse.
Okay.
And now, but you can have that with a Manhattan because of the complex aromatics of the vermouth, which is why I think I prefer it served up, and why I think it was probably always meant to be served up on the rocks. It's fine. No one's going to judge you for drinking it the way you like. And as far as an Old Fashioned served up, it would be probably a little strong, right? And a little boring. Mm-hmm. For that drink, for some reason, the fruit and the bitters and the sugar, all as it kind of gets diluted, that's where you get all the flavor. The slow dilution of the rocks in there releases all these different flavors, that beautiful reaction of water and whiskey together. And so it's really just the rinse of absinthe that makes a huge difference. I'd say if you were to do an Old Fashioned maybe with a rinse of scotch and try serving it up, I mean, it might be interesting. Might be an interesting experiment. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But to me, the Sazerac is just so unique, and there's this magical combination of those bitters and the whiskey or cognac and the absinthe and the lemon peel. Those four things coming together, moving to room temperature, is just like nothing. It's so good. It tastes so, so good. And yeah. And I say you can have that with a Manhattan, although I'd drink it a little faster than I probably would drink a Sazerac. I've picked up a Sazerac. I have put down a Sazerac, sipped, half of it, forgotten about it, come back to it hours later. Still delicious. Still delicious.
But also, who forgets about a Sazerac?
Oh my God, I'm a very forgetful drinker. Do you know what I did yesterday? because I was doing a video, so I thought it didn't matter. I used juice in a cocktail. I made a breakfast martini, mm-hmm. and I used juice that I had juiced a month ago and then froze as soon mm-hmm. as I juiced it and then defrosted it over a week ago. Mm-hmm. And then I tasted this cocktail, and you know what? Still good.
Yeah.
It broke my brain. I was like, I don't even know what's happening right now. Like, why is this juice still good? Why is it still so delicious in this cocktail?
Well, I mean, I think it's not freshly squeezed, but it is squeezed like
it is.
You with your hands. You didn't add whatever citric something to make it not spoil, and you didn't cook it or pasteurize it or whatever it is that they do to put it in that little yellow squeezy bottle.
That's true.
So
that just goes to show you how important that is, you know, having your own fresh doing your own fresh juice.
And that is, I mean, and so we've talked about this, that we have a Meyer lemon tree that averages anywhere from 300 to 400 lemons a year. And there is no way that we can use them all at once. And why would we want to cram it all in? So we freeze the juice and freeze it in ice cube trays. So then you have like a nice size.
Very smart.
And I find using, and Lee will often buy a ton of limes and mm-hmm. juice them if they're on sale, and then we freeze them. And then you have to play the game of,
is it lemon or is it lime? Yo, that's why a chef always has blue tape and Sharpies. I'm telling you, I'm getting that tattooed on my body. Everyone has like jiggers and bar spoons and their fancy mixology tools, Bart. I'm going to have like blue tape and Sharpies. Tattooed on my arm. It is the true tools you cannot live without.
I am 100% certain that he and I have each consumed a daiquiri or margarita that has been made with the lemon juice and thought that it was like unusual, but like, oh, that's pretty good. But I also think the Meyer lemon has such like a floral, like it's such a pretty flavor that you didn't, and it's fresh juice. So it's not like you were like, oh, this is awful.
No,
it's just like, maybe I use different rum, and that's why it tastes is so different. Okay. I like that. I like those answers. And now you've made me want to do a rinse on an old fashioned, like maybe I'll do some Petey Isla rinse or something and see what happens.
I definitely have a cocktail that I do that with, but I put it on the rocks. You know, I keep it on the rocks because mm-hmm. that's just the style. I don't know. What does Robert Simonson say about this in old fashions?
You know, I did not consult his book, even though it's on the shelf. But I was also kind of curious about your thoughts in working with the drinks, not just about like why people did, you know, because things change and they can start out one way and end up another, either because it's easier or it's great or it's taste better or something.
Oh, yeah. My grandpa loved his Manhattans on the rocks. And the first Manhattans I had were on the rocks. And it was because he wasn't much of a drinker. So, you know, that's a strong drink. So it mm-hmm. slowed him down a little bit, and it slowed down the drinking of the drink. And that's good. I'd say if you're a little bit of a lightweight, go ahead, put that mm-hmm. Manhattan. Because Manhattans will knock your socks off.
Yes. Especially if you have three of them.
Let me tell you, there was a time when I was like super into Manhattans in my early 20s. I realized very quickly, I'm like, oh, if I go beyond four, it is very bad news.
Yes.
Very, very bad news. Two is like my limit. Three, maybe. And then you got to go home in a hurry, girl.
For me, it's the Dorothy Parker martini poem, except I just substitute Manhattan.
Me too.
So we have a topic today. And we're going to do the topic, and then we're going to end with answering the question from the last listener, because it's funny. Mm-hmm. And the topic I guess it's inspired by the other night, Lee and I cleaned out our liquor cabinet, and we put everything that we had on our dining room table, and it is an abundance of stuff. It was organized by spirit, or rather by like cane, agave, whiskey, and then other. And the other category got very big because we confronted these bottles of various products that either someone was moving away and they gave us, or we bought for to make a specific drink, or we or I won it at some U.S. Bartenders Guild thing,
or somebody used it as payment instead of actually paying us for our work.
Yes, yes. And this is something a lot of you don't know, and I'll tell you, I have never been paid in whiskey because I don't live in the 19th century. But that spirits companies or events, you know, contests, the prize is often can be the liquor that the company makes instead of actual money. So unless there's a new barter system that is going to emerge as a result of this pandemic that we are in which case some of those products might be, you might be able to get some pretty cool stuff with your bottle. Oh, that just reminds me. So I'm working on a talk for the, I've been giving online presentations to the employees of the Sazerac House during this time. And I'm working on a talk of whiskey in New Orleans. And just so you know, there's a wonderful website database where you can search historic newspapers and you can limit it. Like, so I limit it to historic New Orleans newspapers. And if you put whiskey in, just put in whiskey, it's like 116,000, you know, for responses. So you have to limit it and stuff. But for a little while, I was looking at flatboats and whiskey because I was hoping that there could be, you know, let's like see what comes of that. And in 1966, in the there's a column, and it's there was the for sale, but there was also the like willing to swap, you know, like it's like I've got this, if you've got this, can we swap?
Oh, cool. Just like
and now. it was I have a sealed case of Cutty Sark and I'm looking for a toy poodle.
Oh no.
It's like, what a very specific set.
Oh my God.
It, the vector. I was like, what is the intersection here? It's like, what? Or did you look around your house and think, what is worth a toy poodle? What do I have in my closet, garage, attic? Look, a case of Cutty Sark. And in the 1960s, you know, Cutty Sark. That was worth something.
That was good stuff right there. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So anyway, getting back to the bartery. So we have all these bottles. Now, some of them were, we'd been drinking them down. Like we took out anything that had like less than an eighth left. So we're just drinking it down. And it doesn't matter if it's fancy or not, because I read a great article in Eater and it was about drink it all. Like, this isn't the time to like save the best for later. This the time to drink the good stuff.
Absolutely.
And they even use the term like Marie Kondo, your liquor cabinet, but in the opposite way. It's like, does this spark joy? Then you should drink it.
Drink it.
I don't want to give anything away that we have. I don't want to throw anything away. I don't want to be wasteful right now. But we have, you know, it's like, what else am I going to do with this bottle of Creme de Violette? There's only so many aviations, you know, in my future. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask you, and then I'll share with you some of the things that we did, for our listeners, some advice about spring cleaning your liquor cabinet. And what are some tips of how to like approach it in a way that will feel satisfying and perhaps off, you know, give you a little surprise treat that you weren't expecting.
Absolutely. Well, I have two things. When in doubt, make a sour or a spritz. With a lot of those modifiers that you only use a little bit of and you don't know where you're going to use it again, try mixing it into a sour. I had a bartender audition for me once by making a chartreuse sour, which I was like, what? With egg white and everything. And it was a boozy AF, but it was also very, very delicious. if you have, so I would like for that creme de violet, I'd like to see how that sours up, you know? Mm-hmm. And, speaking of the creme de violet, also it would spritz up very well too. Of course, mm-hmm. you add a hefty amount of that to some champagne or even some soda water, and you've got a refreshing little cocktail with just like maybe a little squeeze of citrus. For other things that maybe won't go so good with citrus, like some more savory or after dinnery stuff like cacao and, Frangelico and nut-based, of course, and stuff like that. Yeah. I'd say definitely start experimenting with some milk punches. Mm-hmm. Throw those in. Throw those in with some coffee, tea.
And you know what you need?
Your coffee or tea.
And you know what you need to do? You need to take that bottle out of the cabinet, and you need to move it over to next to the coffee maker, or take your tea box or can of tea box, whatever. Take your teas out, put them by the. Also, no one's coming over, right? So if things are a little cluttered in your coffee making area, like that's okay.
Or unorganized, it's okay.
It doesn't matter. But yeah, that is actually key because when things are in the back of the cabinet, then
you forget about them.
Forget about them. We found
them. Put them where you can see it.
He's like, we have another bottle of Ardbeg, Ardbeg 10. It's like, hooray! It's like finding $20 in your coat.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that is one thing that we did. We took out a bunch of stuff, and it is now in various places around our kitchen and other living area. Next, we may actually. I'm thinking we should put a post-it on some of them. Drink me, a la Alice.
Yeah. Yeah. I brought out, I had a little Passover Seder with a friend long distance and brought out some sherry for us to drink. And I have that still on my, my coffee table. And now whenever I sit down after work and I'm watching some TV and I think, oh, this is usually when I have dinner, but I already had dinner earlier because my schedule's so messed up. I'm like, well, I guess it's time to hit the sherry then. And I bring out my grandma's little cordial glasses, and they're really small, so I just kind of refill them a couple times.
Yes.
And I get that satisfaction of bringing something to my lips as I'm watching TV before bed.
Yeah, yeah. I also think that I recommend to folks doing what we did, which is we cleared off a table and we took everything out.
Yeah.
And organize.
Reorganizing. Organize it. I love organize it like you would, like all your spirits together, all your modifiers together, in your sections. Hey, here's a one if you really want to get nerdy about your whiskey selection. What I like to do is I organize my whiskey selection by distillery. Because you have multiple bottles, right, that come from the same distilleries.
Right.
So I keep all my Heaven Hill distillery stuff together, all my Beam distillery stuff together, all my Willett distillery stuff together. So it's by distillery I organize my whiskeys. And if you're going to get super nerdy if you have scotches, definitely do it by region.
Of course.
Yes.
Isla is not mixing with the Highland.
Never.
They would come over and be... Well, they just move them over themselves.
There'd be clan wars yet start up again. Oh, Roy, Braveheart, it'd be a disaster.
Oh, you said
that's Irish accent.
Yeah. Also, I thought when you said Rob Roy, I was like, and a penicillin. And those are the only two scotch cocktails I can think of. Oh, speaking of
Drambuie.
What am I going to do with this bottle of Drambuie?
Drambuie.
I know we bought it to make a Rob Roy. I'm sure.
Oh,
we did.
Dude. No, it's rusty nail.
Rusty nail.
No, definitely. That's a great sour. Oh my God. A Drambuie sour is delicious and low alcohol. So again, you can pound them.
Yes.
Pound them.
Okay. When you moved, how did you decide what to take with you?
I, same thing, kind of looked at what was low. What was low, I either drank. I tried to take mostly full bottles. And I gave a lot away to people.
Thank you. I think we either haven't opened or just opened that Clément Silver, except it's not called Silver. Blue Clément something.
Yeah. Whatever so color good. It That's is. Like my favorite. My favorite. I love that. Cane blue. Yeah. Yes. Oh God, I still really want to go to Martinique. My biggest civil liberty that I'm really kind of concerned about right now is my right to go on vacation. The good news is because I'm not going anywhere, I'm saving lots of money for my next vacation.
That is true. So, all right. So recap real quick, which is take everything out, put it on a table. Yep. Take out anything that you have like a little bit of and put that somewhere prominent so that you can drink it. And number two, I would say take out something that's super fancy that you've been saving. Now is the time to drink it. We're confronting, we're all staring into the abyss and a chasm of uncertainty. And so you may as well have something pleasant and then start moving things around your house. So that you see whatever those products are that go with wherever you are in your home. Maybe you could even put something in the bedroom.
Or in the bathroom, in the bathtub, something that's good for sipping, swigging, you know.
Yeah.
We had shower beers, had a moment. Why not have some shower gin?
Right.
I like that. It's refreshing. goes nice with my eucalyptus bath gel.
Well, I was thinking more along the Armagnac in the tub.
Oh, yes, that would be delightful too.
Yeah.
So something else that people have been doing that I've been reading a couple articles about is infinity bottles. Have you heard about those?
No. They last when forever. This sounds like Harry Potter, right? Harry Potter gets some
and
sort
the infinity of bottle.
And he's like, and it just fills up like Jesus in the wine.
Well, what you do is when you get like near the end, you just start blending all your whiskey together. Make like your own house blended whiskey. If you have like some, you know, if you have 10 bottles that have like, you know, an inch worth of whiskey in it, try and experiment. Pour them all together.
Sure.
Make your own blend.
Interesting. You know, this is a thing that they do in France with cheese. When you have all the little pause in a minute and look up the word, but they grate, like when you have all those little nubs left over cheese, so you grate it all and then you melt it together in like you have to make a bechamel sauce because not all cheese just melts on its own. And so you make, it's like you make a fondue. But it's this specific kind of fondue that is made from using up all your leftover cheese. And I'm going to look up the... Hold on.
That's such a great idea. Who has leftover cheese?
Well, that's the thing. So there's a wonderful book called The I Hate to Cook Cookbook by Peg Bracken. Came out in the 1950s. And she's very wry, very funny. And she talks about how there's a whole chapter on leftovers and how all these people are very, they have lots of advice about what to do with your leftover egg yolk from when you made your egg yolk, from when you made your souffle. And she's like, I give it to the dog because it's good for the coat. It's healthy and you're whatever. It's like, I don't keep them around or freeze them or whatever. And then there's always recipes for what to do with leftover cake. Who has leftover cake? What if two things happens with cake? Number one, you make it and for whatever reason, You and your family don't like it. It's not good. What do? You give it to the neighbor. Or number two, you eat it all because
it's good.
Yeah.
I made tapioca banana vanilla wafer pudding last week. And it was good, but not as good as I wanted it to be. I think I added too many cookies. And so then I made banana muffins and I put the pudding in the muffin batter. And my muffins came out really moist.
That sounds very good.
That's a terrible word for some people. They don't like that word. Yeah, sorry.
No. Okay, great. Oh, so I found it. It's called Fromage, F-O-F-R-O-M-A-G-E, F-O-R-T, which I think means strong. And this is Jacques Pepin's recipe. It was his dad's recipe. He used to combine pieces of camembert, brie, Swiss, blue cheese, and goat cheese together with his mother's leek broth, some white wine, and crushed garlic. These ingredients are marinated in a cold cellar for a week to a week and a half. He liked it really strong. Now his wife makes a milder version in a food processor that only takes seconds. And so you have a half a pound of cheese pieces, not an ingredient you often see in a recipe. One garlic clove, quarter cup of dry white wine, salt and pepper. You put everything in the food processor and you process until it's creamy but not too soft, and you pack it in small containers. Use now. Serve cold now or later. Serve cold, spread on bread and broil. And there you go.
I'm totally going to go out and buy a whole bunch of cheese so that I have leftover cheese pieces so I can make that dish.
Well, you know, Whole Foods does this where they put out the little pieces for like less than $5.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think it's so you can try. But, okay. So did you have any other cleaning out the liquor cabinet advice? I like that infinity bottle idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could definitely do that with – we have a couple of whiskeys that I could just – consolidate. Okay, so here I'm very excited about the last component of our episode. And the last question comes from a reveler, and her name is Julie Hanna. And when you join the Drink and Learn Revelers, you have to answer at least one question. There are three of them. One is, how did you find out about the podcast? But another is there any topic you'd like to see covered in the future? And she said, pairing cocktails to the types of pets you own. And I feel like in these times, when we're all looking to the internet for pictures of adorable puppies or like baby elephant playing in the ocean spray and the penguins who got to roam around the aquarium,
and kittens. Like,
we're just looking for anything that gives us joy and distracts us from it all. That this requires actual thinking. Okay, so you will be the nature of the task is a distraction because you have to like focus. Got to think about your pet. Got to think about what you think about drinks. Think about personality. All this stuff. And so I think like my gut said, you start with the species, and you start there, and then you go to personality. But then I got kind of bogged down in, let's say, species, spirit, personality, spirit, and then like what are the spirit personalities and how do you decide? And it's kind of, then it got overwhelming, and then it was like, okay, I don't like it's too hard and it feels like work. So can you have a couple of tips of how to like kind of drill down and end up creating something based on what your pet is?
Well, Funny enough, we had an event to benefit a local shelter here in Seattle at our property hearth at the Heathman Hotel in Kirkland, Washington, just 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I created a whole menu of drinks for my dogs. Some were kind of classics or twists on classics. One was a straight up classic because I had a dog named Pal. And of course, there's a drink called the Old Pal.
The Old Pal, yeah.
And so that's like definitely his drink. And so for Ronnie, she is, you got to think of their voices. Think of the voices that a pet have. And then what kind of the voice that person, like what would they order, the voice of that person? So think about the voice, you know, that when you're talking about your pet or you're talking for your pet, what do they sound like? So Ronnie is very much like Rosalind Russell type. She's very much very quick and witty. And she's like, get away from me, you big galoot. And she's got a lot of moxie. And she's a classy, classy lady as well. Even though she's had some rough times in her past. So her drink was a Sparkle Magic Cure. It was basically a Cure Royale with some edible sparkly glitter in it, because I always say that she's part unicorn because she's absolutely magical. Bandit is a little bit more of a laid back dude, and he is Chihuahua, and I wanted to honor his heritage. So it is a mezcal salty dog with grapefruit and mezcal and a nice spicy, salty rim, since he loves licking his feet so much. That's just very silly right there off the top of my head. But I definitely see, like, you know, think of your voice. Think of your pet's voice. Like, yes. When you talk to them, when you talk for them. And then imagine that voice as a person ordering a drink in the bar.
Yeah.
What do they order? What does Archie order?
Well, so there's Archie has two voices.
Something laced with Xanax.
Archie has two voices. There is the voice with which he speaks to us, but Archie is a rescue who has some very big fear issues. So Archie's the original social distancing dog. He really likes people to stay away, and he's very loud about it. He would be very good monitoring the streets of Manhattan or New Orleans. Why? Where's your mask? Stay away. The voice that I hear is most of the voice that I hear when it's just Lee and Archie and I, which is a total like goofball loving, happy voice. But he is kind of a goofball because I think he was alone for a very long time and he didn't really learn how to interact with other dogs. Our dog passed away. Sophie had to kind of teach him how to act. And he's still a friend of mine, Monique, observed that he still acts like a puppy, even though he's absolutely not. There's a certain amount of obliviousness. Some might call it innocence, but there's like, all right, Archie, you know. So I have to think, I mean, I think his palate isn't very refined. Mm-hmm. And so now, I'll think about it that way. And I'll see what Lee's thoughts were. But he is mostly Belgian Malinois. So I think that I would want to have, you know, I mean, maybe he just needs a Belgian beer, but...
Oh, give him a shandy. Give him a Belgian shandy. Throw some, like, Wolf Amer in there. That Wolf Amer, which is like a bitter orange liqueur. Throw that in a nice Belgian beer. So you've got the wolf in him that is, like, prickly, but it's, like, totally mellowed out by the Belgian beer.
Oh. Well, I will share that with Lee. That's a really good idea.
I like that. Yeah. I can see him drinking that. We should say, don't actually give your pets any alcohol.
No. This is drink in their honor.
Yes, for you to drink in their honor, and cheers to them for being such good company during these difficult times. And I tell you, mine know something's going on, and they feel like they're getting the fuzzy end of the lollipop for sure. That I still have to go to work.
Well, there is that. But I think so. While you're cleaning out your liquor cabinet, mm-hmm. perhaps you will spy something that you forgot that you had, or you never even knew you had, and that can inspire you to use it in a drink created in honor of your pet. And I encourage it, all of you, if you make something, to please post it and tag us on social media or however you like to social. There's at Drink and Learn across all the things. And Abigail has two separates. She has Twitter and Instagram. So what are they?
Twitter is at NYC baby, and Instagram is my name, Abigail Gullo. Although you could also follow my dog on Instagram. She's Boudin Queen, Boudin Queen.
And you can join the Drink and Learn Revelers and share whatever you made there. And I do want
to pictures of your pets.
With pictures.
We want to see pictures of your pets too.
But make sure that the pet is not actually drinking the drink. That's not okay. This episode's going to air while the Drink and Learn Book Club is still happening, although we're approaching the end of April. And we've been reading Hungover by Shauna C. Bishop Stahl, and it's hysterical. And I had read some of it before I chose it as the April book, not knowing that we were going to be in this particular state of the world, but it's a good one to read. It's not heavy. There's learning, but not heavy learning. It's kind of the perfect mm-hmm. drink and learn book club kickoff. And we'll be having a Zoom discussion in early May. So everybody will have time. You'll have the whole month of April to finish reading it, a la back when you were in high school or college and you like crammed 80% of the book of whatever the Scarlet Letter before the night before your test. There will be no test, but I encourage everybody to participate because at the Zoom, and also if you can't make the Zoom on Facebook, I'll be collecting questions for Shauna C. to answer when I interview him for the podcast. So there can be, there's lots of incentive for you to finish.
Excellent.
It. So I hope that everyone is doing okay, or is doing as okay as you can, and stay healthy, stay well, and yeah. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, y'all. Miss you. Come to my bar soon, please.